That's alcohol.
Must be a quart. Excellent. That's about half of what we need for the generator. See if there are any more around.
The companion spread out in a standard search pattern while Mildred hung the fish oil lantern from the ceiling hook.
Two more, but both are empty.
Got another door.
Don't bother.
Christy reached past JB and turned the knob. The door swung aside, revealing a large room with brick walls and heavy wooden furniture. A table covered with extra clothing and some blasters stood before a glowing fireplace.
Baron's bedroom. Now we know how he got in and out.
Let's see what's in the trunks.
The companion started tearing through the huge collection. Breaking open the lock, Jack lifted the lid to find a nude centerfold of a woman on the inside of the lid, the photo slightly reddish from a layer of varnish. The trunk was packed with gold and silver jewelry.
Junk.
Maybe.
JB started tossing away the antiques. Soon they reached the bottom of a drawer. Lifting it out, both men gasped as they uncovered a rack of automatic rifles gleaming with oil. Stacks of clips covered the bottom of the trunk.
M-16s!
Huh. Kept all the good stuff for himself.
Ryan lifted another auto blaster from the nest. He worked the bolt and checked the action. The rapid fire was worn, but with no sign of carbolic acid corrosion from putting it away dirty. Dropping the magazine, the man thumbed out a cartridge. Using the edge of his panga, he pried loose the lead ball at the front of the brass and cast it aside. Sheathing the blade, he then poured the contents of the cartridge into the palm of his hand.
Black powder. This would jam after only a few rounds, even if the powder had enough kick to operate the blowback bolt.
That explains these.
Mildred lifted a wooden object into view. Deftly, she slid the thing onto the arming bolt of the M-16. It fit perfectly.
They made the autofire into a bolt action. Set the selector to single shot and just work the bolt every time you want to fire. Slow as hell, but better than a jam every few rounds.
This one's full of clothes. And boots!
Massas?
These should fit.
Grinning happily, Jack yanked off his old boots and tried the new pair.
Heh, just fine. Any socks?
Nope.
Damn.
I'll take some laces.
Christy tossed Dean a pair, and he started eagerly undoing the stiff military string. It was the same stuff as on the booby trap, he noted, and mentally filed the trick away for his own use in the future.
Oh, sad.
Doc returned a book to the wall shelves. Every volume in the room was destroyed with age and fat from being waterlogged. The pages expanded to the point the ink was bleached clean and completely unreadable. Even the leather bindings were cracked and crumbling.
No Caesar, but time burned this library of Alexander. Tempus morta ergo sum est.
You have the syntax of a high school student.
Mildred looked over the collection. She scowled as she began to browse through the titles. Several books were private printings of experimental research, chemistry, gene splicing, DNA alterations, and a lot of coded books with Pentagon and top secret markings.
There was a bioweb research lab on this island. Or rather, wherever these books came from.
We saw the spider.
Ryan lifted a lump of oily canvas from a trunk full of cables, electronics, and circuit boards. They looked like the guts of a computer. Why anybody had saved the stuff, he had no idea. Closing the lid, he laid the bundle on top and cut away the stiff string. The unwrapped, oily canvas exposed a large blue steel revolver.
Webley 44.
Ryan hefted the blaster and broke the top loader in two to check the cylinder. There were four rounds inside and two empty shells.
Even with black powder, they should work fine. Good blaster.
I'll take it.
Christy tucked the cannon into her belt. The S&W was nearly empty, and she needed a backup piece badly. The Webley slipped down a bit, and she had to tighten the belt to keep it in place. Now she knew why the sailors wore such wide belts. Going to the largest trunk, off in its own corner, JB tricked the lock with a knife and forced open the lid. Nestled in plastic foam were rows of military grins. Underneath was another layer and another, going straight to the bottom of the trunk.
Jackpot! 6 lires of 20 grands. Dark night. We could hold off an army with these.
If still alive.
With practiced ease, Ryan opened one and checked inside.
Dead. The plasma's dried into dust.
If the primers are still good, we could stuff these with black powder. Not very powerful, but better than nothing.
That wake?
Sure. Did it before.
Going to the last trunk, Ryan discovered it had no lock or keyhole. It had to be one of the Chinese puzzle boxes. Probing carefully, he ran fingers along the seams and found a loose piece of wood that slid aside. As it moved, he jerked back fast as steel needles stabbed out from the trunk, then back in again, almost faster than he could see. Stabbing with his knife, Ryan tore the lid of the trunk apart, exposing the clockwork mechanism.
Son of a bitch. Spring-driven.
He snapped off the needles with his gun butt. The steel was smeared with a green substance that he knew to be deadly. Whatever was inside, Langford had prized very highly, more than blasters or grins. Those trunks had simply been locked, not armed. While the companions took cover, Ryan stepped away from the trunk and carefully lifted the lid with the tip of the stire. The broken cover flipped up and flopped over the back. Nothing happened.
What the hell?
Inside, a pad of foam cushion covered the contents, but lying prominently in sight was a tiny dead frog, yellow in color, no bigger than his thumb. Ryan tossed it aside and started to look under the foam when Mildred screamed as she saw the frog hit the floor.
Sweet Jesus, is your hand numb? Answer me, man, seconds count. Is your hand numb?
No. What were you going to do, slice off my hand?
To save your life, yes, but it wasn't necessary. It was too old, just like the Grens. Much too old. You're a very lucky man.
You saved him from a dead frog?
Madam, really?
Chilled from touching a frog? Don't see no quills or teeth.
Poison skin?
Right. It's called the golden arrow frog. Some of the Amazon natives coat their arrows with the oil on its skin to kill enemies. But they couldn't eat the creature afterward. The poison was so strong. The frog naturally makes a powerful neurotoxin that kills seconds after contact.
Liquid nerve gas. Good God. Frogs can live a long time without food or fresh air. Hell, if you're right, even a dead one would kill for months.
A year? When one of the explorers touched the frog, his hand went numb, then his arm, and seconds later, he toppled over dead.
And here's what it was protecting.
Christy raised a glass bottle into view from the trunk. Its silvery label was faded with age, and the writing wasn't in English. But they all knew what it was.
Vodka.
Plus some whiskey, rum, gin, and a whole bunch of wine. A lot of these are empty, mostly the whiskey and rum, but we got plenty of vodka. Guess Langford didn't like it.
Awful stuff. Got no taste.
But it's our ticket home. That will burn in a motor just fine.
Mix gasoline and booze as fuel?
Not in a regular engine. But a turbine will burn anything. How many bottles?
6.
More than enough. We have the fishing trawlers, and now the fuel we need. Just have to get our backpacks, and we're gone.
Let's move these trunks into the bedroom. Don't want anybody to find this bolt hole. We may need it.
Safer for us, too. Not going to night creep us in your room.
Hopefully. But I can't wait to leave these islands.
In the next room, Silver jerked her head away from the spy hole in the wall as the doorknob began to turn. Darting into the hallway, she closed that heavier door and began to listen again at the keyhole. They were discussing their plans in detail now. Taking a small golden frog from her pocket, she bit off the head and sucked out the guts, feeling the deadly toxins tingling down her throat. Then she ate the rest, licking her hands clean with a forked tongue. This was perfect. When her people had spread the white cough among the previous norms of the Ville, it chilled them fast enough, but then new norms arrived in the big ship Constellation with its many cannons, and her tribe dared not attack. Ah, but now the new Baron was going to sneak away from the Ville, taking most of the good blasters with her. The moment the Outlanders were gone, her people could attack and finally cleanse their home of these invaders. But by tomorrow night, maybe sooner, the island would be theirs once more. Nothing would stop them this time. Praise be the Maker. The companions spent the night in the Baron's bedroom, sharing the huge bed in shifts, the door blocked with the heaviest trunk, a roaring fire in the fireplace to forestall any unwanted intrusions. In the morning, they stayed alert at the dining table, while pretty young girls in oddly low-cut clothing served the men and Mildred breakfast, and older women, more sensibly dressed, served Christy. Not born a fool, Ryan could see what was happening and offered Christy a slice of pineapple from his plate. But when the redhead reached for it, a serving girl darted forward and knocked the plate to the floor. Almost spilling from her clothing, she bent over to clean the mess.
"Please forgive me, sir. The comfort of my kin is very important to me. So I will be tasting everything brought to the table before they eat. Is that clearly understood?"
"But I... as you command, Baron."
The girl promptly raced into the kitchen. The older woman came back in a few moments with different food.
"We could smell it had gone sour."
Ryan took her wrinkled arm and held it firmly in his grip. She gasped, and he offered the mug.
"Taste it and make sure."
The matron nodded eagerly and drank, spilling some down her clothing.
"See? Nice and fresh, sir. Very good. Just harvested."
"Go."
She stumbled back a step, then darted into the kitchen, cradling the arm as if it were broken.
"What's wrong with these people?"
"Poison the latrine seat next."
"Act normal. Eat fast. We're leaving on the noon tide, with or without the backpacks."
"That is, if they let me leave."
Water splashing around his neck, Dean reached over the gunwale of the dugout canoe and handed his father the ebony stick. Ryan opened it and checked the blade within. The steel shone as if freshly polished, its day underwater causing no noticeable damage.
"That's almost everything, just the medkit and JB's munitions bag left."
Ryan had originally planned on using the local oyster divers for this job, but after the incident at breakfast, he wasn't letting anybody near their blasters and grins.
"How are you feeling, son?"
"Fine. This is easy, Dad."
Dean was stripped down to his shorts and a pair of woven sandals, around his waist a canvas ammo belt with the pouches full of rocks. Just enough to balance the natural buoyancy of the human body, so he only had to expend strength swimming, and not endlessly fight to stay submerged.
"Any sign of the medkit?"
"Sure. 10 feet over that way."
"Hang on and rest for a minute."
Ryan went to the canoe's bow. Lifting a large rock, he brought it to his chest and heaved toward the location indicated. It hit with a mighty splash and disappeared, the attached rope snaking along the bottom of the canoe, then yanking a fishnet full of inflated pig bladders over the side and down into the water. Using the bladders for air, the boy didn't have to waste time swimming to the surface every couple of minutes and could stay down for long periods of time, 10-15 minutes at a stretch. It was how they'd gotten so much done so quickly. The rest of the companions were equally busy. Doc and Jack were staying close to Christy for protection, while the sec men loaded the trawler for her official tour of the island. Mildred and JB were with the slaves making black powder because they said it'd be done today. Everything had to appear perfectly ordinary, but once the two came back, the companions would all meet at the trawler and get out of there. There was no way the sec men could stop them once they had sufficient firepower. The trunk holding the rapid fires and grins was already on board.
"That lard working?"
"Nice and warm, but the damn fish keep nibbling on me."
"Bite them back."
"Watch me."
Dean took a deep breath and plunged into the harbor. The salt water stung his eyes for only a moment before they became adjusted again. At a steady pace, Dean swam all the way down to only a few yards above the crumbling wrecks that covered the harbor bottom. Then he started sideways, searching for the skeleton in the crow's nest. It was the most easily spotted object underwater, and served as his anchor for finding things. Shafts of sunlight sparkled through the clear water, making the wreck a relatively easy job. It was only inside the sunken ships that the shadows were thick, the broken hulls still protecting their cargo from thieves and raiders. After a few minutes, Dean was forced to exhale and take a careful sip from the inflated pig's bladder tied to his belt. The clip on his nose was uncomfortable, but his father had been right. There was a natural urge to inhale through your nose, which would easily chill him. Finding the fishing net of additional pig bladders, Dean replaced his used one for a fresh. Then he glanced about for the crow's nest and headed that way with a short bamboo spear at the ready. He felt vulnerable without a blaster, but tried not to let it bother him too much. Then something moved into his field of vision, and the young cotter turned about fast, jabbing with the spear. But it was only his hair, animated by the currents of the sea. He chuckled, and a sip of ocean got into his mouth, momentarily blocking his throat. Exhaling hard to clear the air passage, Dean drained a fresh bladder, making it go flat. Exhaling again, he took a smaller breath from another bladder and felt his heart slow down. Death was everywhere in the depths. Even laughter killed. It was a sobering thought. A school of brightly colored fish swam past him, and Dean froze, waiting for them to pass. They were only little things, but he knew there was usually something big chasing the smaller animals. He was correct. Only yards behind the school came a black lightning bolt wiggling through the sea, an electric eel, its pointed snout packed full of sharp teeth. As he watched, it snagged a fish and swallowed it whole. The rest of the school darted off at fantastic speed, the eel staying close behind, catching another and another. His lungs were nearly bursting before the hunting party had moved onward, and he drank deeply from the shrinking supply of bladders. Mildred said he could only dive for an hour before risking damage. The boy was already way past that mark, so he hurried to finish the job. The med kit was lying in plain sight on a bed of pristine white sand, a small red crab poking at it with claws. Dean chased the crustacean away. The packs were much too bulky to drag to the surface with any ease, so he simply tied on the rope, released the bladder, and his father would paddle over to the bouncing buoy and haul them into the canoe. A dark shape moved on the surface, and the med kit ascended. All right, only a single bag to go, the most important one, JB's explosives. Studying the undersea vista, Dean tried to reconstruct their hasty swim from the sinking skiffs in his mind. Now, if the lifeboat with Jones sank over there, and he'd found his own backpack there, then the last bag should be somewhere near the coral breakers. Charging his lungs again, Dean headed for coral and swam along the irregular side of the submerged wall.